So hopefully we are
recording.
The red light is on.
We have to behave from now on.
Yes, you do. Donna's sitting right next to me, so if you hear her voice, that's who it is. Okay, so I missed last week, and Sandy mentioned that you had gone through, made it through that first chapter of Can You Trust God? And those that are listening and anybody here, if you did not get a chance to read chapter one, the preface and chapter one, I would strongly encourage you to do that. It was a blessing to me, and I thought God, in his sovereignty and in his sense of humor, in a way, knew I needed to read this book. It is just, I'm sure we're going to get into a lot more even today about trusting of God, but I want to go back and read that central idea from lesson one on page 227. So lesson one, last week, Can You Trust God? The central idea is that God is completely sovereign. He is infinite in wisdom. He is perfect in love and therefore worthy of our trust. God's desire for us is that we learn to trust him. And I underline that word learn because that tells me, okay, I don't have to know everything about trusting him right now, today. And I don't know, and you know, sometimes that can be discouraging to myself, like, why can't I trust? Why am I not trusting? And that was just a good reminder to me that we are learning. This is a process. We don't have to know everything today, and even in trusting God. So that was just an encouragement to me. So I wanted to point that out for those of you that didn't get a chance to read through that chapter, I would encourage you to do that. And then just his thought too, that he's completely sovereign, infinite in wisdom and perfect in love. And I thought those were, those are great reminders for us as well. And now that I say that, I'm probably gonna write those out on a card and have them with me. Because it's good reminders for us. So today, our lesson number two is God in control? And I'm on page 237 in our book. And the central idea is God is in control. He has a purpose and a plan for you. And he has the power to carry out that plan. And when I started doing the lesson, I read chapter two in our book, and then I went back and I'm like, oh, we're supposed to read chapter two and three. So I don't know if you caught that. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No wonder it was kind of long. Yes. So we probably won't make it through all the way today. But so keep in mind when you look at that lesson in our, I think most of them are just one chapter. But I was almost through it, and I happened to glance at that, it's like, oh, we're supposed to read chapters two and three in this book for this lesson. So we'll just see how much we get through here today. We might not make it through all the way. So anyway, we're all learning, right? We're all learning together. So I am going to go ahead and read through this section that he wrote here on examining trust. God is sovereign, all-powerful, and he is good. God's providence is a term we often use in Christian parlance to acknowledge God's seeming intervention in our affairs. There are two things wrong, however, with the way in which we refer to the providence of God. For one, we almost always use the expression, the providence of God, in connection with apparently, quote, good events. God controls both the good and the bad. God has not looked the other way or been caught by surprise when adversity strikes us. He is in control of the adversity, directing it to his glory and our good. And we're going to see that a lot. His glory and our good. The second problem with our popular use of the expression, the providence of God, is that we either unconsciously or deliberately imply that God intervenes at specific points in our lives, but is largely only an interested spectator most of the time. God's providence is his constant care for and his absolute rule over all his creation for his own glory and the good of his people. Note the twofold objective of God's providence: his glory and the good of his people. These two objectives are never antithetical. They are always in harmony with each other. The Bible teaches that God not only created the universe, but that he upholds and sustains it day by day, hour by hour. Scripture says the Son is sustaining all things by his powerful word in Hebrews 1:3, and in him all things hold together, Colossians 1:17. The Bible also teaches that God governs the universe, not only inanimate creation, but also the actions of all creatures, both men and animals. He is called the ruler of all things in 1 Chronicles, and the blessed and only ruler in 1 Timothy. Randomness, luck, chance, fate. This is modern man's answer to the age-old question, why? Even many Christians who accept the concept of God's sovereignty believe that he chooses not to exercise his sovereignty in the daily affairs of our lives. Christians are often unwilling to accept the fact that God is working because they don't understand how he is working. They have chosen to substitute the doctrine of chance for the doctrine of divine providence. I admit that we are often unable to reconcile God's sovereignty and goodness in the face of widespread tragedy or personal adversity, but I believe that although we often do not understand God's ways, he is sovereignly at work in all of our circumstances. If there is a single event in all of the universe that can occur outside of God's sovereign control, then we cannot trust him. His love may be infinite, but if his power is limited and his purpose can be thwarted, we cannot trust him. He permits, for reasons only known to himself, people to act contrary to and defiance of his revealed will, but he never permits them to act contrary to his sovereign will. One of our problems with the sovereignty of God is that it frequently does not appear that God is in control of the circumstances of our lives. It is difficult to see God working through secondary causes and frail, sinful human beings. But it is the ability of God to so arrange diverse human actions to fulfill his purposes that makes his sovereignty marvelous and yet mysterious. No one can act and no circumstances can occur outside the bounds of God's sovereign will. But this is only one side of his sovereignty. The other side, which is just as important to our trusting him, is that no plan of God's can be thwarted. God has an overarching purpose for all believers, to conform us to the likeness of his Son, Jesus Christ, Romans 8:29. He also has a specific purpose for each of us that is his unique, tailor-made plan for our individual life. See Ephesians 2:10. I readily admit it is difficult to believe God is in control when we are in the midst of anxiety, heartache, or grief. We must learn to obey God one choice at a time. We must also learn to trust God one circumstance at a time. Trusting God is not a matter of my feelings, but of my will. That act of the will must be based on belief, and belief must be based on truth. We must believe the truth that God carries out his own good purposes without ever being thwarted. And he so directs and controls all events and all actions of his creatures that they never act outside of his sovereign will. That which should distinguish the suffering of believers from unbelievers is the confidence that our suffering is under the control of an all-powerful and an all-loving God. Our suffering has meaning and purpose in God's eternal plan, and he brings or allows to come into our lives only that which is for his glory and our good. So in our first question of developing trust, what is God's providence? The examining trust section may help you to answer these questions. How did he define God's providence?
His constant care for and absolute rule over all creation, for his glory and the good of his people.
Exactly.